welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 491. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
And Dan Sullivan.
Hello.
We are back on time this week. Last week, the podcast went up technically this week, just to confuse matters, because I went to upload it on Friday, and we have been moving servers. The whole website's been shifting servers recently. And as a result, we had a bit of trouble getting the podcast live due to technical hitches. However, it went up on Monday, one of those two. So this is kind of a double podcast week, you extraordinarily lucky people. So you have to deal with two lots of us this week. It's too hot in this room because it's sunny and I can't open the windows. So I'm sweating. How's everybody else doing?
Yes, boiling, absolutely roasting here. And I'm full of cold as well, which is fantastic.
So you're going to sweat it out. You're sweating out the grim.
That's the plan. Yeah, I'm just going to lock myself in my kitchen and get rid of all
the... Boil the kettle, turn the oven on, open the door.
Maybe not. We'll see.
That's what I hear they used to do back in the day. I heard lots of stories from people's grandmothers saying when it was cold, you just turn the gas on in the oven, open the door.
This is getting dark now. Yeah.
No. I only say it because I tried it. I tried it once. So we were having a raclette, yeah, which is possibly the only time I've done it in my entire life, and sounds like the most middle class thing in the entire world. But someone persuaded me it was a good idea. Just melt some cheese in a thing. I was like, all right, fine. We don't actually have a raclette thing, so I'll use the grill. But I left the grill door slightly open while I was doing the grilling, which I thought was a thing you're supposed to do, right? And the ovens are built to handle that kind of thing, you know, heat. But I came back to, you know, doing it like 10, 15 minutes later, and the knob controls for adjusting the hobs had all melted.
Oh, no.
Fantastic.
Because of the heat pouring out the top. I was like, controls on a cooker that can't handle a bit of heat. This is a substantial design flaw.
Pretty ironic, yeah. It's roasting where I am in York. And to be, we went to York races last Saturday, and Busted were playing. I don't know if you've heard of Busted.
Oh my god!
Just checking, James. Just checking.
What?
But you couldn't even enjoy the day. Like, everyone was just huddled in every little bit of shade, just trying to get out of the sun. It was, I think, it was nearly 30 degrees.
Sure, it wasn't just everyone trying to hide from Busted.
I'm not having that. Busted are good, hey. Year 3000. That's what I go to school for. And actually, they did sing a lot of songs I didn't have a clue about, but they were all right.
Very forgiving. So, what are we doing this week? We have got a bunch of news, including we've got Tetris Royale coming to mobile phones. Perhaps you were jealous of Tetris 99 on Switch. Be jealous no longer. We've got Nier Automata characters turning up in Sin-O-Alice, and a little bit of word when it might be coming to the West. We've got a little bit of information about a new Final Fantasy game, something from the Brave Exvius universe is spinning its way over. Plus, a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Lego Tower, Rooms, The Toy Maker's Mansion, Forgotten Anne, Chess Rush, Marshmallow, Music Dance, and more. But first, the news. So, Tetris 99 came out on Switch not so long ago, and everyone suddenly realized that they were, in fact, not that good at Tetris, which was heartbreaking for a lot of people. Did anyone get on board that? You're Switch boys, aren't you?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I played loads.
I did not play it because I know about my Tetris skills and do not want to go up against 98 other people or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great incentive for online, though. You know, it was so much fun, and it may be one of the best battle royales, arguably. I mean, because it was just so simple, and I'd never did win one, though, which I am gutted about. I think I got top 10 once. I think that's the best I can claim.
Okay. I do remember there was a point where people were posting the, I got into the top 2 into the Slack chat, getting very excited about it. Well, what they've done here is decided that we need a version on mobile, which is probably a good idea. And that version is going to be called Tetris Royale. It's apparently in collaboration with Network, and they have a 3 instead of the E in the word network, so you know they're elite. And this is done by the Tetris company, so presumably this is all official rather than it being some weird kind of knockoff that some random has done, which is good. But according to the little preliminary information we've got, very much the same deal. So 100 players facing off against one another. Players will drop away as they get punted out, and you'll be able to hopefully emerge victorious at the top of the pile, having smashed random blocks into other people's piles and forced them to die and cry. We don't know exactly when it's coming out, but apparently a beta is going to be hitting sometime in 2019. I presume this is a good idea for mobile, isn't it?
100%,
yeah.
Tetris has always worked in whatever form it's on, and it can work in a touchscreen format. The controls don't really interfere. Like, you can do it just as easily with one thumb or whatever. Although, because I never played it, how does it manage kind of swiping blocks into other people's stacks on the Switch, for example? How do you do that while still playing the actual main Tetris?
There's like four different options on your dual stick. So you point the direction, so you can either go to people that are like winning, people that are losing to pile on the pressure.
Oh.
People next to you, I think, is one of the options. So you've got like four, obviously, different directions, so different options.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what the other one is, but yeah, from that you just like hold it or you just press it once and it'll stay in that position.
Sweet. All right. Well, I've got to imagine it's going to be fairly close to this Switch version because it seems to have done really well and people liked it a lot. I've got to also imagine it's going to be free to play, this one, because Tetris 99 was free to play as well.
It was, but it came as part of Nintendo Online, so you had to pay for the online to get access to it.
They are releasing offline DLC for Tetris 99, but it will obviously cost you to get that.
All right, well, Tetris Royale's the name. We'll keep you abreast of any new information regarding that. Along with a little bit of information about Sin-O-Alice. So this is an RPG that I think has been around in the East for quite a while, a couple of years, in fact. But we're finally getting this Western localization of the game, and it's a classic fairy tale thing. So it's taking the likes of sort of Pinocchio, Cinderella, and Snow White, and you have to go around solving puzzles in order to find out and save the people who wrote their stories. So the characters are wandering around saving the authors, is the general idea. So it's all very sort of pretty and anime-ish, but then it turns into what looks like standard RPG-style battles, where you've got, you know, your five characters all hitting off against one dude. It's from the creator of you're going to correct me and say Automata, right? Not Automata.
From what I've heard, yeah, but you've heard my pronunciation of Bethesda, so, you know, we'll see.
Fair enough. All right, I'll take it with the pinch of salt. So Yoko Taro is the name of the dude responsible. And because he's also the creator of that, he's doing a crossover thing where he's going to be bringing Nier Automata characters into Sin-O-Alice, so we'll probably get it by the time it appears. This is the characters 2B and 9S, who everyone's gone completely mental for. I know them almost exclusively through things like fan art popping up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because I follow a lot of artists and stuff. So there, I know that these characters have made a big old impact. Haven't played Nier Automata because the requirement to play it like 100 times in order to see all the endings really put me off as a concept. I think it was a slightly Marmite game where people are saying, no, best game of the year, seriously. It flits through all these different genres and it becomes a shmup and then it's an open world platinum style, you know, hack and slash, and this is all great. But then once you finish it, that's not the ending. You have to then finish it again and play a truncated version, then finish it again and again. And I was like,
The story was different for each of the... They really shouldn't have been treated as New Game Pluses, but the way that everybody discovered it was as New Game Pluses. But like the second time you play, the main character's just gone. So you're playing through as the second character with completely new text and dialogue.
Okay.
So it's very much almost like we'll see you for the sequel next year. So it's almost like you've got a quadrilogy or something all loaded onto one disc. And I really found that the way that people described it as like, oh, the New Game Plus is slightly different and you've got to play the New Game Plus rather than turning it off, really, really hurt it.
It was very stylish and I do sort of like all different endings, but I will always take the first ending as like, that is my definitive ending. That is the ending I've got for this game. And then I'll end up watching them on YouTube or something, the other 50 endings that will be in the game.
Yeah. I struggle with playing through certainly things like narrative-based RPGs because I find that kind of weird. I have people who replay things like Life is Strange over and over again. I don't quite get that because that's, to me, a closed story with one character, and I don't want to go back and then play it through the version where I destroy the town at the end of it, like, because that's not how the story went to me.
Yeah. No, I get that. The Batman Telltale ones, I did actually play through multiple times, like, just because I was that fascinated with that world and I wanted to see all the outcomes. So
okay. I don't know. It feels like it somehow, it breaks the illusion a little bit for me. Because when you go back and you play through all the different endings, it's like, oh yeah, this is very much just a flow chart and I'm making these decisions, which just flips the tracks over to a different section, and then I start to feel like, ugh. In fact, I've started playing David Cage's latest Magnum Empathy Machine Opus, the Detroit one with the droids, and that literally puts the flowchart at the end of every scenario. See, this is here. This is where you could have gone. This is what you took. This is how many people in the world took this choice. Like at the end of the Telltale Adventures, where they give you the percentages of who chose what, and this is like, if I already didn't feel like this was a massively stagey computer game, I certainly do now. And it just kind of rips you straight out of whatever immersion might have been created, which, let's be honest, isn't a great deal, because David Cage's idea of what dialogue and humanity looks like is just, oh, it's a big old... What a mess. Yeah. It's so funny. It's like every possible terrible-ass cliche you could imagine.
That's free on PlayStation Plus this week, funny enough.
Yeah, I paid the appropriate amount to play it, which was £6. That's the appropriate amount to pay for a David Cage game once it's come out.
That can go on the box.
I'll always play his games. I will always play them because he's the only one of him. He's an auteur, and I quite like there being auteurs. I want the David Cages and the Molyneux making their ridiculous claims and then coming out with nonsense. I think it's good. We need these people in the industry. As opposed to everyone just trying to see how they can, like, you know, swindle you out of more money using clever mind manipulation techniques.
All the memorable dialogue as well. The Jason.
Yes. Or the poor French actor trying to do the voice of the boy with an American accent. And that was floating around Twitter as well this week. Oh, God, a mess. Anyway, Nier Automata, Thing, Sin-O Alice, coming to the West in a bit. We'll let you know when. Finally, bit of news. Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, which is apparently the spiritual successor to Final Fantasy Tactics, specifically the new game in this little franchise, War of the Visions, which has been revealed. I think it got announced in September, but we've now got a proper trailer for the game and a little bit of gameplay as well. So, Final Fantasy Tactics, did anyone give that a bash? I remember the PSP version.
I enjoyed the first one. I didn't enjoy the later one, but I was massive into like grid-based, turn-based games at the time. So,
right. Yeah, so as Dan says, rather than this being the standard three characters against a whole bunch of enemies, turn-based RPG, this is more tactical, more strategy. It's still got that, you know, the RPG thing, and I think it's got jobs as well and all that kind of stuff, but it's all playing out on a grid-based isometric board, and you're moving your characters around and getting into battles that way. This is taking the lead from that game. So War of the Visions is very much that. We have got a little bit of gameplay tucked in at the end of the trailer, which looks quite nice. As in, you know, it's visually pretty. It does remind me of Tactics. I think they're making some concessions to mobile as well. So if you are maybe new to the game, they've got an auto mode, which you can use, which is very, very common in a lot of, especially free-to-play RPGs at the minute. Yeah. And a high-speed mode if you're just bored of watching character animations and stuff. But the rest of it feels very Final Fantasy by the look of it. So you've got, you know, limit bursts and abilities and, say, the full job system as well. And you say you really like the first one and then veered away on the second, the sequels. What changed that made you kind of cool on the whole thing?
So I may be misremembering this, but the one that I first played didn't have that weird judge system in it.
What's that,
as far as I remember. So there was a little character on each battlefield that basically was just how they justified special map elements.
Okay.
So like it'll be like, nobody can do magic.
Oh, right.
Or nobody can go higher than 3 tiles above the lowest point.
I see. So it's individual rule sets.
That's it. And I very quickly got caught in some contradictions with it and just went, nah, and went off and played Tactics Ogre again. Or Vandal Hearts. Yeah. So it was like, nobody can use melee weapons. It was like, this is the second fight of the game. People only have melee weapons. What are you doing? And yeah. So just a bad experience for me.
Fair enough. Well, this stuff works really well portably. I'm sure it'll be great on touchscreen. There is a pre-registration offer up on the official site, though currently it's all in Japanese. So, you know, if you happen to be out there in the East, then great. We are going to assume that it's going to be coming over to the West sometime this year, we're hoping, judging by the usual timescales from these things. So as soon as it does appear, we will let you know. But keep them peeled. War of the Visions, Final Fantasy Brave Exvius is the name. Go check out the trailer on PG. out and about this week. We're going to start off with a mobile game called Rooms the Toymaker's Mansion, which is a sequel to Rooms the Main Building. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's what it was called.
Nice. All right, then.
Which was like a 2008 DS game.
Oh, this originated on Nintendo.
Yeah.
Actually, that kind of explains a lot to do with the art style. I was getting major Nintendo-y vibes off of it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, the original one actually looked, I guess, more, I don't know what the term would be. The character was a lot taller. It was a bit more adult, but it had the same core mechanics to it. But this one with the little girl, she definitely fits that Nintendo aesthetic a lot more than the initial character did.
Oh, gotcha. Well, the way that this works is it's a tile sliding puzzler. But the conceit is, rather than these being like flat tiles, you're just shifting around a board to try and put them in the right order. The idea is you're looking at a cross section of a house, and there is a girl who's in one of the tiles, one of the rooms of this house, and she has to generally get a key and then get out a door. But obviously, each of the different tiles represents a different room in the house, and maybe the key is over the other side of the board, and you need to like basically start sliding the boards around or the rooms around so they interconnect with one another, so she can then walk between the rooms. And then once she's inside a room, you then have the option to move it. You can't just move any tile. She has to be standing in that room in order for you to move it up, down, left, or right, depending on what's in your way. That's the general gist of it. I've played about like 10, 15 levels of the sequel version. It's like, first of all, what was the original like? How did you find it?
I quite enjoyed the original. It started off slow. It felt like, bearing in mind that this came out in an age of like, I can't remember what the other one was called, but you remember Exit, where you had these games where you were looking at cross sections of worlds and they were like almost puzzle platformers. So this came out in a time where kind of Exit and I suppose later on Framed.
Yes. We played the mobile stuff with Framed, yeah.
Were about. And so this felt very welcome. This felt like a very welcome puzzler. I really enjoyed them. They picked up new mechanics quite quickly, which presumably the mobile version will start doing for you soon.
It does.
Yeah, stuff like rooms sliding themselves or certain ones only interacting with other ones. Well, that's there from the start, but yeah.
Well, so far I've got a telephone, and if you go to the telephone, there is perhaps a telephone in another room somewhere around the grid, and if you use it, you can teleport between those rooms, for example. So that's a new little wrinkle that changes the way in which you move things around. So 10, 15 levels of it so far, just to give it a go, like 20 minutes or so. Feels nice. It's fairly simple-ish graphics. It almost looks like it could be a 3DS port, you know. It's got that slightly lo-fi look to it. But it's cartoony. It's a nice little idea. You immediately get hold of it, and it seems to be iterating on itself quite quickly, as you say. So promising. Haven't, you know, played the full thing yet. It is a premium game, so you are going to be paying actual cash money for it. It's, I think, $4.99 or £4.99. Yeah.
It looks interesting. It reminds me of Bring You Home a little bit.
And that's the one where you're changing the entire world, isn't it? Sliding it around.
Yeah, that's right. So a little bit like that. So what's the story then? How does this work with the little girl? What's her journey as it was?
I almost definitely skipped whatever intro animation was there. But as far as I'm concerned, the story is get me out of this house. I don't know anything beyond that.
Okay.
£5-ish on iPhone and on Android as well, if you want to go and grab it. The name of that one is Rooms the Toymaker's Mansion. Now, we'll jump over onto Switch for a moment, because a fairly big release came out this week in the form of, what's the full title? It's Mario Maker?
Super Mario Maker 2.
There you go. So you have been playing this one, Matthew. First of all, did you play the original?
I did, yeah. I probably put probably 200, 300 hours into the first one on Wii U. I loved it. Yeah, fantastic game.
Goodness me. All right then, so you're well equipped to talk about this. With the release of the sequel, what's changed? What have they done differently?
The main thing is they've brought in story levels. So there's 100 handcrafted levels from Nintendo. And to be honest, it is a tool creation set, and there are going to be some fantastic creations put on the web from users and everyone. But Nintendo know this software like no one else. So I'm excited to plow through the 100 levels they've created, because they can just do some truly extraordinary things with the toolkit. So I've started that. Basically, the story is Mario and Toad and Toadette are working on Princess Peach's castle. They've just finished building it. And then this dog arrives called Undo Dog. And he basically just destroys the castle. He presses a button, holds it down, and it just destroys everything. And the, the game is you collecting coins to rebuild the castle. So very light, but, you know, it gets you into the action and everything straight away. I've played about 10 of the 100 levels so far, but it's very inventive. You know, Nintendo know exactly what they're doing with this software.
Just to clarify, the Mario Maker based around you building levels kind of has a stealth Mario game inside it.
Pretty much, that's the thing. You've basically got, you know, new Super Mario Brothers Switch poured into it with all the different styles, you know.
Right, okay.
Because in it you get the Super Mario Brothers 1 style, Super Mario Brothers 3, Super Mario World, new Super Mario Brothers, and new Super Mario Brothers 3D World. I think that's the 5. And then there's also a blank canvas currently, like a blank space, which is teasing a 6 theme art style coming in the future. So maybe Super Mario Brothers 2.
And what did they have in the previous game, the original one? Was it limited to just a few skins, or did they have all those in there as well?
No, it was all of them except for the new Super Mario Brothers 3D World.
Okay.
So they brought that in as the new one, and then they're going to be bringing in another one. And probably, I don't know how many more they could do. They could do Super Mario Brothers 2. I'd love a Paper Mario style. But the gameplay of that is very different from...
Of course.
I don't know how they would integrate that. What is fantastic is the tutorials, which is a very rare thing, I feel, to say, because you just want to get in the game. But with it being so extensive, the toolkit, there's like 30 different tutorials from beginner to expert working you through how to basically build a course. And it's there if you want it. If you don't want it, that's fine. Go nuts. But they're all very detailed and it works you through it. And it's just really useful from what I've been playing so far.
How does that compare to the original game then? Was the onboarding any good in that? Did they have lots of tutorials there too, or not?
You'd unlock more items and enemies and everything like that the further you'd play. And from what I've played so far, it seems like you're given everything from the start, which is cool.
Okay.
But the tutorials is much more in-depth than before, and it's appreciated for someone like me that is looking to spend, you know, a good couple hundred hours, and I do want to spend, you know, 10, possibly 15 hours on one level, you know, crafting it to perfection, making sure it's flawless from when I eventually put it online. There has been some issues with the online because it's not been great for sharing and stuff. It's just Nintendo Online, you know what they're like. But there's been some cool levels I've played so far. One of them that I'd shout out is called Mushroom Kingdom Battle Royale. Okay. And it's you and 99 Goombas dropping onto like a Mario level map. And you've got to stomp on the 99 Goombas to complete the level. And I thought that was just really creative.
And the online mode was existent in the previous game because it was obviously based around sharing as well. Is it just piggybacking off that? Can you, for example, access games from the original Mario Maker via this, or are they two like completely separate siloed things?
Yeah, they're completely siloed, and even Nintendo tends to get rid of levels that have been uploaded after a week. Like, it's not great. I mean, that is the one thing holding it back, the online. I mean, it's a big improvement over what they had before, and even the 3DS version had a lot of issues with sharing. I think you could only share with friends on the 3DS version. You couldn't even share publicly. I think that there was a bit of a hubbub about that. But I need to invest a lot more time in the online before I honestly give it a honest appraisal.
Fair enough. All right. Well, Super Mario Maker 2, that's out on Switch right now. I'm guessing, is it full price, these things? It's got to be like £30, £40,
right? Yeah, £39.99 I picked it up for.
Yeah. There you go. All right then. So that's out right now. What else have we got on the list of things? Oh yeah, Lego Tower came out. Now, you might remember way back, so Tiny Tower and other little spin-offs that came off the back of that. These were kicking around like 2014-ish, so a long time ago, but there was a little run of it where they were very popular for a bit. And it was basically a side-on view of a tower with the front wall ripped off so you can see inside it. And the idea was it was a game where you were trying to effectively populate this tower with a bunch of people, start a bunch of businesses on the different levels, get all the people who were living there working and working in the right shops, the right thing, moving people up and down and just getting this little ecosystem going. So it's one of those games you keep checking back in and people would have been doing stuff in your absence and, you know, just built and grew and grew. They then did a bunch of spin-offs where they were tied in. The one I remember is there was a Star Wars one where you were just sending stormtroopers up and down the lifts and that. Now, just seemingly out of nowhere, after a break of years and years and years, Lego has jumped on board and decided to do Lego Tower. I actually didn't check whether this is in collaboration with the original guys. I assume it must be. It's effectively the same principle, only the tower is made of Lego and the people you're populating with it are minifigs. And it does a lot of the same stuff from the old games. You are sending people up and down the elevator, which you have to do manually. You are assigning people to the appropriate jobs based on what their interests are and stuff like that. You have little mini games that pop up, which I don't remember. So people will suddenly turn up at the door and be like, oh no, I've delivered a pizza to the wrong floor. Can you find the pizza? And then it's a hidden object game. You just tap it and get them out of the way. Occasionally pirates turn up because this is Lego, so you can have anything, I guess. And you'll have to get rid of the pirates that are just charging around your floors and causing nuisance. And that's sort of the gist of it. I've played about half an hour just to get the feel for it. And very familiar. There's, you know, even more of a free-to-play aspect of it this time because, you know, you can complete things quicker by using bucks and there is virtual currency there or you can buy stuff. So it's just that, you know, speeding up the game style mechanic for the in-app purchases. But they have the minifigs option where all the characters can be customized by swapping out their individual body parts. So you can put new legs on them or new tops or new heads or new hairstyles because they're all Lego. And those unlock over time as well. I've seen this game several times before. So it's a bit of a shrug from me. But it was just weird to see it back out in the wild again after several years of it having, I thought, just we were done with this. This was a genre that has sort of had its time. But it's back. We'll see if it picks up any traction with the kids nowadays. But Lego Tower is the name of that. That's free to play and you can grab it. One thing I did start playing today, and I played through the entire first chapter, is a game called Forgotten Anne. And I've been Googling to try and find out when this came out on the App Store. I'm thinking it was like maybe last week or the week before. I'm not sure, but did anyone know?
Last week, I think, was when we had the site takeover for it.
Yeah, because I know that they've been sponsoring it this week, which obviously now I've said that people will go, ah, anything he says doesn't matter. But no, I have nothing to do with the sponsorship. There's a kind of siloed thing back and forth. I do sponsored videos from time to time, but anyone who's watched my channel knows that I always be like, this is sponsored, by the way. Yeah. And then I don't say anything qualitative.
No, we don't actually have any real direct dealings with the sales team either. It's all kept separate. So
we were very kind of particular about that because we don't want anything to seem untoward, which is why, especially on the videos, I'm very much like, by the way, this is a sponsored thing. It's like within the first 5 seconds because I don't want it to be misleading anyone to what the content is. But I just dug this up and because it appeared on a list somewhere. I was like, I'll give this a go. This is charming as hell.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So the way that it plays out, it's an anime-styled game. It's effectively a platformer by way of like a point-and-click adventure is what it kind of almost feels like. Anyone old enough to remember Flashback the first time round?
Or Another World, wasn't it?
Yeah, or Another World, yeah. Very much the same camp. Or maybe they've played the remake of Flashback, which appeared on, I think, Xbox Live not so long ago. You might have had some contact with it. The mechanics of the movement feel like that. So you've got a beautifully animated main character, and it's a slide-on 2D world where you're going inside buildings, you know, dragging left and right or moving up and down staircases. The jumping mechanics is very similar to Flashback. Mm. So it's not a sort of smooth thing. It's lots of holding left and then jumping, and then the character grabs onto the ledge, and then you push up to kind of climb up onto the ledge. And it has that slightly, like, awkward robotic feel to it. But it's not about that. It's not like a reactions-based, you know, combat game. That's not what it is. It's an exploration adventure. Mm. And I've been super impressed with the world building so far, because the idea of it is why I compare it to Spirited Away. It's an entire like underworld beneath the real world where abandoned things get sent. So if you lose, for example, a sock, there is a sock which you follow in the first little intro sequence and it disappears down into this world. And all the things that have been discarded, all the forgotten items...
Forgotlings,
that's right, have become the population of this world. And it's an entire like city that's running and being operated by bags and scarves and other bits and knickknacks. But you play as Anne, who, and it hasn't done a reveal yet, I assume, is herself a forgotten, discarded object.
I mean, the title would infer such...
Yeah, so there are a couple of human characters kicking on around here, but it does a few things brilliantly. Like you saw this running a little like years ago, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah. I mean, at the time it was being rattled around as a Studio Ghibli inspired action platformer.
Yeah, so I reviewed the game when it came out on PlayStation. So I've played it start to end, obviously. Yeah, it's got a gorgeous aesthetic to it and everything. And very intuitive puzzles. You know, it's as you were saying, it's got a charming story. It's quite bizarre, though.
Well, the thing that massively impressed me, because I've only played the first chapter, because it's free to download the first chapter, but then you pay like £9.99, $9.99 to get the full game. And I understand this has already been on PC, this has already been on Switch, and as you say, PlayStation, a few other platforms. So it's finally getting onto here. But the way that it switches from the gameplay bits of you wandering around like seamlessly to little anime cutscenes... Mm. Was very impressive. When you go through a door, there wasn't like a weird, awkward pause. You know, walk to open a door, and the moment you go to open it, it switches to this, you know, in the animated version of her walking through the door, looking out into the world, and then suddenly that transitions into a bit where you can move the camera around and look at what's going on and highlight objects and say, what's this, what's going on? So that's the point and clicky bit of it. But yeah, the transitions are beautifully handled. The score is really impressive. It's got a proper like John Williams-y, it's very over the top, it's very big.
Yeah.
It's telling you what to feel all the time. The voice acting isn't too bad, which is impressive because often these things are hella cringy, but they're not bad. And I was like, I played all the way through to the end of the first chapter, and then it was like, you've got to go and get a code for the game. So, and wanted to carry on. I don't think this is going to be impeded by being put on mobile. I think the controls are fine. They're adequate for the purposes. Because I don't think, I imagine the game was not this like smooth, agile platformer to begin with.
No, it was fine. It wasn't, obviously that wasn't the standout though. If I remember right, they were quite strange on PlayStation. Like there were a few odd choices with the controls that it actually might handle better on mobile.
Well, say, it felt to me like Flashback, and those games did have like slightly awkward stop-starty controls, but that's not what it's about. They're good enough for you to allow you to explore the area, get over certain puzzles and certain areas and clamber down and whatnot. But then most of it is you're talking to these unusual characters, you're making decisions occasionally, so you are like choosing between dialogue choices, and it will occasionally pop up and be like, this could have been handled differently, and there are other alternative options that you could go through to produce a different outcome and whatnot. But I'm totally there. The world building itself was just great. Download the free intro chapter because it does a very good job, I think, of selling itself. I was very impressed with the production value. Someone spent a lot of time and thought on this.
Nice.
And I recommend at least giving the free bit a bash. So Forgotten Anne is the name of that one. And that's iPhone, iPad. I don't know if it's Android, though.
Do you think you'll pick it up yourself?
Well, I've got a code for it.
Fair enough.
So, yes, but I didn't pay for it.
So, will you play it, though? That's the question.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'm gonna. I've already recorded a bunch of it, and if we review it for mobile, I'll definitely do it.
Yeah.
That'd be great. We should pay some lip service to Chess Rush and this sudden burst of chess-based MOBA-inspired games that suddenly appeared. Last week, or Monday, technically, if you downloaded the podcast on Monday, we talked about Dota Underground, which was
Underlords.
This, you know, the under what? Underworlds?
Underlords.
Underlords, there you go. Somehow, which is effectively Valve's and therefore Dota's official version of this mod that came out. We've also had a couple of other chess-style games appearing. So I mentioned that the original creator of the mod, they've done their own game. And I don't know if this is what this one is, but Chess Rush is another one. I think three have appeared in the past 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, I believe Chess Rush is the one from Tencent.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, there
what's,
you go.
What's interesting is Tencent owned Riot, and Riot made the League of Legends auto chess that's not on mobile, but is doing quite well as well. So that's like the one that we haven't spoken about in the last, you know, couple of weeks. But Tencent, who owned that other one, have now shown up on mobile with this.
Yeah, Tencent like to have their fingers in many pies, though, so it's not very surprising.
This is true.
Yes.
Yeah.
They secretly own everything. Are you really realizing?
Even this podcast.
But if you look at it, and I haven't played this one yet, I've tried to download it twice and it keeps failing on me, but just looking at it, it is very similar to the Dota one. Dragging your hero characters out onto a chessboard, and then over the rounds you get to choose to drag more people in or purchase more characters to place on the board, or purchase the option to increase the number of characters you can have on your board. And with that, I have to play it to confirm just how different it really is. Dave Aubrey is the one who's
Dave
going to
is
be
the
doing
one. He
all
is embedded in the auto chess culture now.
He is chess. And so we'll be relying on him to produce a whole bunch of articles and guides and comparisons and things. So if you are interested in this new chess phenomena, go check out PG for his articles. And we'll be working out which are the best ones on mobile and how to play them and all that kind of stuff. Finally, I guess. Oh, no, not finally. Well, P3 is a game that I played a lot this week for a review. I think it came out last week, but it's a very, very, very lo-fi CRT TV retro aesthetic shooter. So a classic vertically scrolling shmup. It's pretty decent. It's very brutal. It requires a lot of stop-start and try again and try again and try again and get a bit further every time. Until you turn the app off and turn it back on again and you're all the way back at the beginning. So that's worth knowing. If you keep the app open, you can pick up from where you left off. There are like a few checkpoint points. But once you quit out of it and go back in, back to square one for you, which I guess is, you know, echoing the coin-op kind of classic arcade style. But visually, it's very impressive. I really like, it's a black and white with a bit of red Undertale, I guess, style, where it's very, very lo-fi, but they've got the CRT effects beautifully. It does up the ante quite significantly with additional enemies. The bosses are good. Some very weird, memorable bosses. Big floating fists punching down the screen at you, or some strange, snaky worm thing. And then giant eyeballs. Several giant eyeballs, actually, taking you out. But it's quite good. It's premium. I think it's only about $2, something like that, £2. But there's a video review up. Do go and check that out and check out the written review as well. If you're into these kind of lo-fi shmup things, might be your bag. So P.3 is the name of it. It's very difficult to Google, unfortunately.
It is, yeah. I've just been trying to do that while we've been having this conversation.
Yeah, it's not having any of it. They really shot themselves in the foot with the SEO. Because it's like, no, I'm not trying to find Persona 3. I'm looking for something else. And that's all Google thinks it is. So the other thing that we've got, and I haven't played this, is Marshmallow Music Dance, which is a rhythm action game thing, free to play. Apparently, it comes with the Joytime 3 album, which people are excited about. I think Marshmello's the guy, isn't it? He's another Deadmau5, where he's a DJ who puts a stupid thing on his head.
Correct, yeah. Yes. And he's sort of a big deal now because he did the first ever live concert in Fortnite.
Oh, so he's extremely online then.
Very.
Righto. Okay, so he's done a game. So all I'm doing is holding up a signpost here with no useful information.
Matt, you seem down with the kids, or possibly even one, one of the kids. Yeah. How does one do a live concert in Fortnite?
So from what I remember, it was a couple of months ago. Everybody just went online at the same time, and they just dropped DJ Marshmello in and created like a concert in the middle of Fortnite, in the middle of the map, where basically everybody could just gather, and I believe they stopped everyone so they couldn't kill, and then everybody was just doing emotes and everything, and everybody simultaneously basically experienced a concert together. And I think that's the first time it's ever happened.
It's a fairly neat idea. Like, I'm sort of down with that. I've been getting the, you know, I've been in VR for a while now with the Oculus Rift, and so I've been trying out some of the VR chat or the little game room things where you're meeting up with people in virtual spaces, which is quite interesting. And I like the idea of it being a vehicle through which you can do communal experiences like that. So yeah, instead of just doing and watching a Twitch stream, just they're just playing the audio and then just sticking his character in there, presumably behind some decks with some fun flashy effects going on in the background. I'm going to say probably not too hard, which is a very gauche thing to say. I'm sure it's really, really complicated, actually. But theoretically, you know, just like playing a soundtrack, just looping it on, you know, a live stream of some audio. So there you go. Play that. Anyway, this guy's got a game. It came out earlier on in the week. It looks like a three-lane kind of thing where you're choosing to tap like one, two, or three different lanes as bars come down the screen, according to the video. But I haven't played it. I can't tell you. It's doing very well online. The kids are loving it.
I can confirm the kids are loving it.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right. So Marshmallow Music Dance is the name of that one. That's free to download iPhone, iPad, and Android as well, I believe. Okay. That'll do it for this week. Thank you for listening and bearing with us through our slight technical issues last week. But hey, double podcast week. I'm going to say lucky again. I'll leave it up to you guys to decide whether it's a good thing or not. Thank you, Dan and Matthew, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Cheers.
And we will be back again next week with more chatter before I run off to Hong Kong. So there probably won't be a podcast the week after, but there will be one next week. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.